Today we have two stories for you. I think they kind of have some similarities, but I'll leave that up to you. Hello everyone, what's up? Welcome to Before Amber, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Lady Amy. Kelly Holen was born on November 17th, 1975, to Judy Moore and Buddy Holen. He was their youngest child, though before he was born, the state had removed his older brother Robert and sister Margaret from his parents' care. The state felt that due to some medical problems, Judy just wasn't taking adequate care of them. But after Kelly was born, they didn't remove him from her care. Not long after he was born, his parents divorced. He lived with his mother, Judy, in Kentucky, while his siblings lived with his grandparents and his dad moved out of state. In 1981, Judy and Kelly moved in with Judy's boyfriend in Pine Tree Hollow, Kentucky. It was a very rural area with gravel roads, not a lot of houses, very remote kind of area. Guys, I looked everywhere publicly I could. I even asked ChatGPT, and I could not find the name of the boyfriend anywhere. If he had nothing to do with it and is just trying to move on with his life, I don't want to drag him back into it, so for the sake of this story, we're just going to call him Larry. Friday, February 12th, 1982, Judy and Kelly were still living with Larry. Kelly woke up that morning super excited because school was canceled. There had been a large amount of snowfall, so they got a snow day. Kelly begged his mom to let him go out and play. At first, she told him no because he had asthma and she felt the cold would just make it hard for him to breathe. After consistent begging, she gave in and said he could go outside as long as he stayed in the yard. So he went out around 11 a.m. Judy said she would look outside to keep an eye on him throughout the day. Then around 4 p.m., she went to a neighbor's house to use their phone because she and Larry didn't have one. Judy said Kelly was playing in the yard at that time, but when she was done with the phone call and she came back, Kelly wasn't in the yard anymore. He wasn't in the house either, so she just thought he had gone to his friend's house to watch TV, something he often did. At 6 p.m., she had dinner ready, but Kelly didn't show up to eat, so she went ahead and ate without him. Then she went to the friend's house to check on Kelly, and the friend's mom said Kelly hadn't been there all day. So let's get this clear real quick. Mom didn't want him to go outside because of his asthma, and she thought the cold would make it hard for him to breathe. But yet she let him go outside, and he stayed outside all day long. Did he not come in for lunch or to get water? Yes, I know it's the 80s and we could drink from the hose, but it's freezing outside, so that wasn't an option. Did he not come in to go to the bathroom or just warm up for a little while? According to her statements, it sounds to me like he was outside all day from 11 p.m. till after dinner. Then you don't see him in the yard, but you decide to go ahead and eat dinner without him. And then you went and asked the friend's mom if Kelly was there. Why didn't you do that before you ate dinner alone? Now you're caught up on my thinking. Let's move on. After the friend's mom says Kelly hadn't been there all day, she goes to Larry's grandmother's house, who was, I guess, living nearby, to call 911, but she says that she wasn't allowed to call 911 to report her son missing until after midnight. What? Is this old lady just evil, or is this just a lie? Why would someone not let you call police until midnight, over 4 hours since you last saw your child out in the cold? Was this grandmother hiding something? Could she not go to someone else's house to use their phone? Wasn't she just using a neighbor's phone at 4 p.m. to call someone? If Larry's grandmother wouldn't let her use her phone, why didn't she go to this other person's house? If it was Larry's grandmother's phone that she used it for, why wouldn't she let her use it again to call police? All this just kind of doesn't add up to me. Anyways, Judy said that the police didn't come right away to start the search, so they started without them. However, officers of the Knott County Relief Squad were sent out right away because they feared that Kelly had wandered off and gotten hurt, was stuck somewhere in an abandoned mine, which were apparently all over the area. Judy said they didn't come till daylight, but according to officers, that is not true. They came out, but they could only search for about an hour because the snowfall just got so heavy. It was just totally not safe for them to search. So this is kind of a gray area in the case. You're telling me it's too unsafe for officers who are trained to do this kind of search, but yet you were still out there searching? That doesn't add up either. Because there was fresh snow out, there were no tracks for anyone to follow. The dogs couldn't pick up a scent, either because of the fresh snow or because Kelly hadn't been there. Robert, Kelly's older brother, who was around 10 at the time, that was living with Judy's parents. He said that at the time that Judy called police, she also called her parents to tell them about Kelly. Robert said his grandfather yelled at Judy saying, quote, I told you we should have taken him too, end quote. Reports say that Kelly's family went to the house to help look in those early morning hours, but we don't know how much searching they actually did in those overnight hours. Robert said that he remembers the following weeks, officers dug up the hollows. They drained wells, they dug up creeks, they looked in abandoned mines and under houses, and they found no sign of Kelly. At first, there was a small report that one of Kelly's friends had said that they walked to the store around 4 p.m., but that report really quickly just disappeared. Most likely that friend was misremembering the days. We're talking about a very young child, like 5 or 6 years old, so they probably got some stuff mixed up. No one aside from Judy reports seeing or speaking to Kelly that day. There's no reports of neighbors seeing him in the yard. There was one report from a neighbor that said they saw an unfamiliar green car in the area that day, but that didn't go anywhere. According to Judy, Bobby, Kelly's biological dad, sometimes drove around in a green car. She thinks Bobby has something to do with Kelly's disappearance, but police have found no connection. No connection to him to a green car, and no connection to him in the disappearance. Robert said he remembered at times that him and his dad, when he would visit him in Florida, would go around handing out Kelly's flyers. Robert doesn't think his dad had anything to do with Kelly's disappearance. Bobby is now deceased, so we can't ask him, but police have never seen him as a suspect. Even when he was alive, maybe he had an alibi or the fact that he just lived too far away. Bobby's sisters continued to search for Kelly even to this day, and they firmly believe that Bobby had nothing to do with this. So, back to the search. Police looked everywhere they could, but turned up nothing. Detective Webb was the lead investigator for most of the time, and he said, quote, something about this case hasn't added up since day one, end quote. Detective Webb, I agree 100%. Something just doesn't add up. He took Judy to a hypnosis to see if that would help her remember something from that day, but no new evidence or information came from that. Detective said that there were many people in the area that had criminal backgrounds, and so they thought maybe one of them knew something or did something, but there was no proof of that. Again, it came back to Judy. Over the years, there have been a few tips, but not many. According to Judy, one time a little girl from Arkansas called and said that Kelly was in her class, but the mother took the phone and said the little girl didn't know what she was talking about. Another time, a family member saw a gospel singer on TV that looked like Kelly. Police looked into it, but it wasn't Kelly. In the early 2000s, police said they had gotten a tip that Kelly's body might be buried under the home's old concrete porch. So they took Judy out there to find where the porch had actually been located because the house had been demolished years ago. They dug up the area but found nothing. I also read in the early 2000s, Judy Moore said that she spoke to one of Kelly's former teachers who said that a school in Florida had once requested Kelly's academic and medical files from the Knott County, but it was impossible to say who had made that request because the county records had been destroyed in a fire. Judy has been classified as a suspect, really the only suspect in Kelly's case. She doesn't know why. She has heard rumors that her sister told police that she had killed Kelly and her sister helped bury him. Judy said she asked her sister about this and she denied it, but shortly after this, her sister stopped talking to her. In January of 2010, Kelly's sister Margaret told the police that her biological aunt, Judy's sister, had left a note possibly containing information about the disappearance. Whether this is true or not, police have never said. Maybe this is why Judy's classified as a suspect. If it is true, what does that note say? Judy says she stopped talking to the police and asking for updates years ago because, quote, they keep trying to get me to confess to murder, end quote. She also says her kids must believe what the police say because they don't talk to her. Almost everything in this case is based on what Judy says. This case is still open, so the files are classified and not available to the public. I'm sorry, this case just does not sit well with me. I feel like telling the story, it's all about Judy, but it isn't. I feel like Judy has made it more about her, and it isn't. It's about Kelly. I looked online, I went to forums and Facebook pages. First of all, one, they were not helpful, and two, There are posts and comments from Judy to others basically just arguing whether she did it or not. Again, it's not about Judy, it's about Kelly. And those forums were mainly about her because she's making it about herself. Did she do it? In my opinion, she might have, or she might know what happened. Maybe there had been an accident, but I don't think he's still alive. His brother Robert has said, quote, everything comes back to Judy. Did she do something? Did an accident happen and Kelly get hurt and die? I don't know, but I don't think he is alive, end quote. Yes, there were people that lived in the area that had criminal backgrounds, but what kind of backgrounds were those? Were they small things like small drug charges, or were they big time like murder? That makes a big difference. I don't want to blame the mom. I don't want to blame anyone who could possibly be innocent. But there are so many things that just kind of make Judy sus, you know? Definitely give her the side eye. Kelly was just a little boy and deserved justice and to be found, even if it is just his body to be laid to rest, where his family can visit and mourn their loss. If you know anything, please contact the Kentucky State Police at 606-435-6069. All right, and today we're going to have a second case. This case is about Nicole Lynn Briner. Nicole was a sweet, happy little girl full of energy and life. She was born on February 20th, 1979, to Melody Thomas Child and Michael Beyer. She lived with her mom and her mom's boyfriend, Timothy Widman, in Pittsburgh. On March 11th, 1982, Nicole and her mom went to the Giant Eagle supermarket on the south side of Pittsburgh. Melody said Nicole wanted cookies, but Melody had told her not yet. Melody pushed Nicole around in the buggy as she was going about getting the items she needed. This was back in the day when there was a lot of room under the buggy so you could sit there and just enjoy the ride, which Nicole was just enjoying the ride. Melody said she went to the meat counter, and when she turned back around, Nicole was gone. At first, she thought that she had just wandered off to the cookie aisle, but when she went to check, Nicole wasn't there. She looked around the rest of the store, and when she couldn't find her, she got help from the store employees. When no one could find her, the police were contacted. Officers began searching the area. As word spread, neighbors and volunteers searched. Within days, there were over 100 volunteers searching the neighborhood and the wooded area near the store. Officers knocked on every door within a four-block radius, but nothing was found. A few days after Nicole disappeared, a letter showed up at her home saying, quote, Nikki was dead and buried, end quote. Police, of course, took this letter to be analyzed, and handwriting analysis said that the letter possibly could be done in Melody's handwriting. Police were looking everywhere and following tips from psychics. Within 10 weeks, they had interviewed over 160 people and administered lie detector tests to most of Nicole's relatives. Nicole's photo was sent to police departments all across the country, but there was nothing, literally nothing. The case turned cold, sadly, within weeks. Police were suspicious from the beginning because Melody's story just kind of was off. There was no witnesses that remembered Nicole being there. No one could corroborate her story. But there was no other information, so they had to go by this. Then in 1986, everything changed. Timothy Widman was no longer with Melody, and he was actually in jail for robbery when he made a startling confession. He said that on March 9th, 1982, Nicole had bitten his toe and he slapped her. But when he slapped her, she fell and hit her head. He said she seemed fine. He didn't know that she was actually really hurt. She went to bed, but died in her sleep. He and Melody panicked and buried her near a road in Brooklyn, Pennsylvania. Melody then came up with the idea to say that she was kidnapped. So after they got rid of Nicole's body, she went to the store alone on March 11th and made up the story about Nicole being taken. Police charged him, but before the trial, they dropped the charges against him. You see, back then, nobody cases were very rare, so they didn't think that anything would happen. Even though he made the confession, they just didn't have anything that actually could prove his story. So without the body, they weren't going to press charges. They did search the area where he said she was buried, but they did not find her. Melody was arrested and charged with felony counts of hindering prosecution and providing false reports to authorities in connection with Nicole's disappearance, but her charges were also dropped when Widman refused to testify against her. Melody died in 2001. But then in 2006, police charged Widman again with Nicole's murder. Nobody cases weren't rare anymore. They weren't stopping justice from being done. So in May of 2007, Widman admitted to Nicole's murder and pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter. He was sentenced to just 2 to 4 years with time served. So Nicole barely had any justice, and that breaks my heart. Widman died in 2011. To this day, Nicole's body has not been found. If you know anything, please report it to Pittsburgh Police Department at 412-255-2888. That's all for today's cases. Thank you so much for listening. If you don't already, please like, follow, or subscribe, depending on how you listen to us. Please leave a 5-star review, as it really does help the podcast grow. If you have a case you want us to cover, send an email to beforeamberpod@gmail.com. You can also follow the show across all social media at beforeamberpod. We will be back in a couple of weeks to remember someone else. Until next time, thanks for listening. Later. All sources are listed in our show notes, but some of those sources include newspapers.com, thecharlieproject.org, Facebook, the Lexington Herald Leader, The Messenger, and WHAS11.com.